Please pull up a seat and wind down. Was your sojourn on Rokkanjima a pleasant one? The Witch of Theatre Going has invited you to a tea party. We hope you choose to attend.
Hello, and welcome to a hidden tea party.
Hi.
My name is Courtney, I'm the Witch of Video Games, and I went for a different intonation today. Not sure how I feel about it. And these are my guests.
Hi.
Hello, sorry, that really got me. Ooh, maybe I should also go for a different intonation. Hello. I'm Jess. My pronouns are they, them. I don't think I'll be doing that again.
Shit. What voices can I do?
Yeah,
I can
see
do
yours.
A pretty convincing Scottish accent. I think oh. I'm like 50% Scottish on my one side, so it's like relatively consistent. I can go like more Glaswegian or like softer, like Edinburgh, like Highland Scot.
How have you never pulled this out for me before?
I have a stock repertoire of Dungeons and Dragons voices.
Oh.
It's like mild Slavic, Scottish in variation, and then Marge Simpson, and there's not really anything else.
My repertoire of D&D voices are like high-pitched, low-pitched, vaguely northern, and German. And that's it.
Mine's just like me but old, and like me but like slightly posher.
I love when you're like trying to convey that your D&D character is sexy, and so you give them a posh English accent. Absolute key D&D.
The only time I've ever done a posh English accent was for a really old man, so...
I've heard your fanfic. I know what you think is sexy.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Rowan. My pronouns are they, them. My discovery to bring to you is that I've developed a specific Umineko headache.
Oh. For some reason, I thought you were going to say kink. I don't know why.
For that delicious egg.
Yes.
For the delicious egg. I desire it. I thought it was a dehydration thing, but I've been dehydrated recently at work because I work outdoors and don't drink enough water. I know what a dehydration headache definitely feels like now. This is in a different place and feels differently.
Whenever you read Umineko it comes out?
So it's whenever I think too hard about Umineko. So today I was reading Umineko and that was fine. And then Will like asked me to explain part of the plot. And I was like, don't ask me that. The headache's coming back. It's like this really like intense headache right in the center of my head. I think Umineko is genuinely doing psychic damage to me.
That's beautiful. That truly is beautiful.
You know it's working then.
I'm just like being slowly worn down into believing witches exist because I can't handle another explanation. It's too complicated.
I can't believe Battler got murdered and dismembered multiple times. He's fine. You got a bit of a headache and you're like, I'm out.
I'm good actually,
please. I'll believe in witches. I'll do whatever you want. Just stop, please.
You really are like racking up the incompetency points. That's all I'm asking.
Yes, is getting a headache a loser flag?
Might as well be.
I mean, yeah, I just... Natsui Corner over, but I just wanted to do headache review for a bit.
Natsui Corner. Natsui Corner.
Incredible. Shall we get into our reading?
I suppose. I've got to remember what happened, shit.
So, this week we read from chapter 6, The Birth of Beatrice, to chapter 8, Here's the Culprit. Well, here's the culprit. The culprit was, in fact, Maria. She did the whole thing. Good for her, honestly.
Maria Trice Real. Speaking of Maria, am I correct? Doesn't this episode...
Yes.
She's there.
This episode does in fact open with some strong Maria content. We are hanging out with the cousins. Yeah, except for Battler, because he didn't make it.
This is my... Right, so I've said this already to these two. I will say it again. Most of my notes for this reading are questions. And so, yeah, it's been confirmed Battler isn't at this funeral. So does that mean that in a world where Leon exists, Battler's not reunited with his family? Like, or if he... Is he just like, oh, I couldn't make it?
I like to think this game board, which is not your standard game board, was constructed in such a way that Battler...
Yeah, I'm just wondering at the reason why he couldn't be there, and if there's something there, like, is it that there's something about Leon that means that, like, Battler's not around?
No.
Battler and Leon can exist at the same time.
Okay.
Chill. Yeah. I had assumed that Battler had visited earlier, which was the scene that we saw earlier, and had already left before Will arrives. And so when the time capsule got stuck, Battler wasn't in the time capsule, even though he did visit the funeral.
Okay.
That's what I'd been working on. I don't know whether or not that's true, and I don't think we'll get...
There's also a little aside about Battler here that Will guesses correctly that Leon pinches Battler's ass every time he makes a pervy comment. And I'm like, honestly, they're made for each other, apparently.
Oh my god, crack ship. Battler and Leon.
They're related!
Oh shit.
They're related, Rowan!
Most of them are related. But yeah, like, we've got the ho-ho, I'm gonna touch your boobs in a sexual way, and the ha-ha, I'm gonna touch your ass, but it's not sexual, ha-ha.
I'm gonna touch your ass in a punishing way.
You know, I'm like, anyway.
Yeah. Putting a pin in, I don't think physically attacking somebody as punishment is good, even if it's non-sexual.
Leon, sure, is doing that.
If you have superiority over somebody, don't use it to physically attack them. If somebody has superiority over you, get their head in a fucking guillotine.
And then also, similarly, maybe don't touch the asses of, well, anyone, but also, like, your family members.
Children.
Other children, you just...
butts are in the no-no square.
And I'm curious about this one as well, because Leon doesn't even have the excuse of having Rudolph as a father to fall back on for this behaviour.
Here's Kinzo.
Where did they learn this from? This might be Kinzo show. I wouldn't be surprised.
This might be
actually.
Kinzo. Beloved by Kinzo.
Kinzo's like, Leon, I have a really good thing that should become your thing. It's grabbing people's asses.
Yeah, getting suddenly a vision of what it's like to be a servant in this household and starting to think certain actions are more justified than originally thought.
Yeah, you shouldn't attack people for bad things unless you're a servant of the Ushirimiyas, in which case kill all of them.
Yeah, it's like, as I was saying, like, listen, if you've got superiority over somebody, don't abuse that. But if you don't, eat the fucking rich. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Leon and Jessica are having a bit of a go at each other, let's just say that.
Yeah, Leon pinches Jessica's ass. And then they have a weird little sibling fight. And honestly, at this point, I'm like, you know what? I think Jessica was better did better as an only child.
Yeah, they kind of go into this, right? Where they're like, Jessica's always been compared to Leon, and that sucks.
And is seen as, like, less good. And, like, it's also clear in this that Leon is also trying to make Jessica, like, conform and live up to those expectations and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, like, if anything, this, like... She hasn't got, like, an ally against her parents here. She's got another abuser.
Yeah.
In Leon, I'm like...
I'm going to read out a handful of the lines here because I'm going to underline this shit sucks. Jessica, shut up. I'll live the way I want to. I'd suffocate if I had to act all refined like you, successor Sama. E, ouch, ow, ow, ow. Stop it. Don't pinch me. This is abuse. Pervert. Stop it. Ow, ow. And then Leon says, Jessica, why are you talking like that in front of a guest? Do you want mother to scold you again?
And it's like, Leon, why are you punching your sister's ass in front of a guest? Like,
this is a really grim vision of what the house is like without a guest, right?
I know, right? Like, if it's this bad in front of people.
Yeah, wasn't happy about this sequence, let's say.
So yeah, I'm just like, Leon, I'm afraid I'm glad that you don't exist in some other fragments. for Jessica's sake, anyway.
Me, so when I finally meet Beatrice, I'm glad that you don't exist.
So while this is all going down, Will uses theatre-going powers on Maria, sort of semi-accidentally.
He shakes her hand and he's like, gets sucked into a portal, like, whee!
Yeah. And then we find out that Maria developed her love of the occult because she considers herself a virgin birth.
Yeah, she's like, yeah. Fully like, I'm Jesus, and Rosa yeah. didn't. Do anything about
right.
that?
This absolutely fucking floored me. Because yeah, so like weird. Will's like turns up in her like sea of fragments or whatever, and she starts quoting the Bible, and I'm like, okay, this took a fucking turn. I really wasn't expecting that. And so yeah, Maria kept being like, oh well, I kept asking Rosa about my dad, and she kept saying that he didn't exist. But I know you need a mum and a dad to have a baby, so... And then a priest, a Christian priest, visited her school and explained that it was perfectly normal, apparently, to not have a father, because Mary did it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, this is wrong in so many ways. Like, you can't just tell a child that they're that they're like Jesus reincarnated, especially as the priest clearly didn't think that. Like, maybe explain.
Well, I mean, I think like the priest didn't expect, just clearly didn't know Maria very well and didn't think she'd like think it was her.
I don't know. I just like, you would think in that kind of scenario, you'd be like, oh, like, you will have, you'd explain, like, you've been born to a parent, but that doesn't mean that they're there anymore. You wouldn't try and put into their head the idea that they were the child of the Holy Ghost.
I will say, there is a certain type of, like, Christian who's trying really hard to convert people that would see a child be like, you know, I don't have a daddy, I just have a mommy. And then would be like, you know who only had a mommy, Jesus, you should follow yeah. him. Like, I can
yeah,
see
that.
He did. And then Maria yeah. being like, not it's to be Maria, in that kind of
I see
week,
it's but... predatory Christianity again, I see.
Yeah. Right. Maria did the most based option in reaction to this and be like, oh, so I'm Jesus.
I'm Jesus. I also have the question, like, why was a Christian priest preaching at a Japanese primary school in the 1970s? Was that a thing that happened?
So it wasn't supposed to be, like, a preaching sesh. It was, like an adult story time. And the adults just, like, brought in, like, a priest because he was free. Because Christianity is followed in Japan. It's not a major religion, but it is. There are priests. So, and obviously... didn't expect one of the kids to be told Jesus didn't have a dad, and for her to go, oh, that means I'm Jesus.
It's the kind of shit that my school would do is like, here is members of a church, they're coming in to like put on a little puppet show and then talk to you about Christianity in a really, really glib way. They would like hand out little Bibles to us and stuff. So it's like fully believable to me. It's a bit weird if Christianity's more niche in Japan in the 80s.
Yeah.
That's like, they've gone out their way to find someone, but whatever, Umineko theming, I guess.
Well, They had to come up with a reason as to why Maria's obsessed with the occult and this.
Well, that's the other thing, is that it's just kind of accepted that her interest in Christianity led immediately into the occult, which I wouldn't necessarily have thought would have followed.
Well, you have to remember, like, she can read fucking Hebrew. Like, where else did you, like,
So this is insane to me, because over the course of the like reading, it becomes clear that what Maria did is she believed she was like the fucking child of God, and then met Beatrice and was like, actually Christianity sucks, I'm gonna become a witch instead, because witches have power, and just being the child of God, like, it's fun and special, but I don't have power.
Yeah, she wanted magic.
Right, so she never needed to believe this in the first place for her to then be converted to witches.
No, she was already into witches. She was into witches before, but yes. She was already into witches. She teaches Beatrice about witches.
Which is interesting. But yeah, like, what I also want to know is, like, in the 1980s, where did a very young Maria get information about Christianity and the occult? Did she rock up at her primary school library and was like, here, right, teach me Hebrew, and I'm going to learn about magic circles from this grimoire I found in the back of a shelf? Like, she doesn't have the internet.
She probably just went to a regular library. And because this is Japan, this stuff isn't, like, being banned like it was over here. So
she was like,
or Kinzo, like, you know, Kinzo has all this shit at his house.
Actually, that's a fucking shout. Yeah, she but Kinzo doesn't like her. Would he have given her this shit?
She's sneaking in. The reason he fucking hates her is because he knows that she's stealing books off him.
She's climbing up the window, like the side of the courthouse, climbing in through the window, stealing his occult books.
OMG, Maria, disgusting spider moment.
Just, yeah, this was all just absolutely wild. I wasn't expecting any of it. But yeah, and then, so I guess meeting Beatrice was a kind of natural conclusion to all of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where she was like, I love the occult, I want to talk about it and know things about it. Here's someone who's a witch, apparently. But weirdly doesn't know enough about magic. I'm like, interesting that, isn't it?
Yeah. Maria writes it off as saying that there must be a different type of magic compendium she studied. But it was fine because Beatrice showed Maria magic.
Yes.
Which is the cup trick.
I do think this makes sense why the anti-magic toxin shit comes from, like, fucking nowhere, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of the, like, symbols and the stuff that's being used and the imagery and stuff has grounding in, like, quote-unquote real-world magic. Yeah. Like, stuff that already exists in our worlds and symbols that we would recognize. Anti-magic toxin stuff is, like... Oh, yeah, this is, like, and it's completely new to me.
It's Beatrice who introduces her to that idea. And Maria's like, yeah, this wasn't in any of the books. And I'm like, it's because it's an incredibly convenient way of meaning that none of the other adults can disprove anything that Maria sees. And also, Maria can't watch the tricks happening.
Yeah. Yeah. God. So that's that.
Beatrice also says that the reason she can't do anything more extravagant is that her powers are limited. Mm-hmm. She can't, like, fully manifest. So that is another way she kind of gets around having to do anything super spectacular in front of Maria.
I wanted to expand on that, because she mentions that's because of the shrine. The narrative that we get, I don't know at this point whether the whole Shannon goes and breaks the spirit mirror is just an entirely witch truth with no evidence, because we don't ever see the spirit mirror broken. The shrine gets destroyed, but, like, yeah, we don't actually know whether Shannon went and broke a mirror at any point. But if she did, like, it happens quite late on, and, like, I just wondered, like, why didn't Beatrice, if she wanted a narrative of let's go break the mirror to, like, get my power back, why didn't she ask Maria to do it?
I wonder why. Very interesting question.
I don't know, mirror symbolic. It's the don't explode the island button.
Yeah, the shrine has the big red nuclear bomb button that goes off in 2 days, and she's like, oh,
the
I have to.
Fuse. It's just the longest fuse known to humankind that trails all the way through the tunnels.
I hate that Courtney's like latched onto this as something important and interesting, because now I'm like, oh, maybe it's the...
No.
Maybe that's the entrance to the epitaph tunnels, and she was like, oh, I can't let Maria find this for some reason. This is the problem I'm having with Umineko, Echo, is I feel like I know a lot of the who did it, and like some about why they might do it, but like really like their actual motives and how it would help them do these things, I'm still like, I don't know why Shannon would, what Shannon would get out of any of this. Like, if it was... If she dresses up as Beatrice and kills people and then sets off everything to destroy the island and kills her as well, like, what does that get her?
I think it's because she's the Joker, but for trans women. I just...
That's interesting, Rowan. That led you to think that.
She's just, you know, Balor was her queen, and God forbid anyone... I just Beato with fucking like damaged across her forehead. I think this is just like Shannon wants to go sicko mode on these people. I'm starting to think she's probably based for doing that.
I would accept that if it wasn't for that for that bit that we got the red truth, that the motivation for all of this wasn't revenge.
Shit.
I mean, no, Shannon not based like, anymore. The side objective. Maybe she's like, it's something I want to accomplish, and if I go sicko mode on these people in the process, woohoo.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
That would be kind of based.
For a moment there, I thought I saw a glimmer of hope.
Do we want to go into some seat law, or do we want to save that for later? Because there's a bit of seat law here.
I'm going to continue with the Beatrice thing. There was one bit that was really sad to me, because Beatrice makes Maria promise. She was like, basically, every time you visit the island, I'll come and talk about magic and we'll be friends. But you have to wash your hands every day. And wash your mouth out as well. And I was like, was this Beatrice just being like, I know you get absolutely zero parental guidance at all, so every time I meet you, I'm just going to give you tips for how to stay healthy.
So very recently, gotta wash your hands. One of my friends, who I know is a bit of a disaster wreck, posted on their Twitter, give me a challenge to do every single day of February. And I responded to the post, eat a piece of fruit. You get bonus points if you don't eat the same fruit 2 days in a row, and they fucking did it.
You just like tricked them into
I was like haha, sick nasty challenge for you, mate. Eat a piece of fruit every day, get your fucking vitamins, that's my challenge. And they did.
Beatrice and being I think like, that... I can motivate this child with magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, sorry for Rowan's story time, but I'm really proud of having like
you Beatrice
manipulated
that friend.
My friend into having eaten fruit. Next up, gaslighting people into going to therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, seats. Brush your teeth every day. Seats.
I think we should we should mention that the concept of seat law is happening. Because at this point I was so confused.
In this reading, there's a lot of seat law because Will is constantly trying to put together this seating plan in his head.
Where people were sitting at various times, various visits to Rokunjima and stuff. And this is I know this is at least somewhat relevant because I remember that in episode one, when it was first established, we were introduced to everyone. They gave there's like a really rigid seating plan of like who the the Shiremiers sit next to at family conferences and shit. I drew several diagrams, all of which I've left in a different room. But I had no, like, at this point, I had absolutely no idea why any of this was relevant.
I had an idea, but I don't know whether or not I'm allowed to say it.
It is more relevant later, so I'll just leave it at that for now.
Yeah, but yeah, Will seems weirdly interested in where people were sitting for some reason.
And also we get the law that while Beatrice would not show herself in front of the adults because of the toxin, the servants and Nanjo would see her.
Yeah, they'd come past and have a chat sometimes at their little tea parties.
Yeah.
And she specifically mentions Shannon and Cannon having visited as well. Which was confusing because I was like, if we're going with Shannon is Beatrice here, then like Shannon can't also be there when Beatrice's there. Unless Shannon and Cannon are taking turns.
Can't they're the same person?
Yeah, like, this is the thing, I'm like, you can't have Shannon, Cannon and Beatrice all in the same place talking to each other, unless, like...
Well, it's just them, or it's someone who specifies that.
It never said that, like, I have to get into this later, because we bring up an important point later, so I've just put a pin in that for now. Yeah. We'll get back to that.
But yeah, that was confusing for me at that point. I was like, what? Yeah.
Will kind of susses the whole thing out about kind of who this probably is, and this is probably the Beatrice of 1986.
Yeah, and he basically says as well that, like, he thinks that this Beatrice was, like, steadily wanting to show herself to all of the members of the family, starting with the ones that were least resistant to the concept of witches, and was like, oh, so Battler was always intended to be the last one. Which I thought was interesting, because at this point in time, like, before Beatrice is introduced in 1986 and Battler arrives at the island, would anyone have actually known how resistant he was to the witch theory? Because they hadn't seen him for 6 years. Like, how much would they have actually talked about witches with people when he was 12 years old for people to know he's definitely the one who's going to be the most against the theory? I don't know.
Depends how well you knew Battler when he was 12. You know, maybe if you had some sort of fixation on him for some reason. Mm. I don't know, though.
Or if there's a special reason why Battler needs to be the last one. That's, like, less to do with the toxin and more to do with, like, he will be resistant for extraneous reasons, like... Mm. He'll fucking know it's Shannon. Be like,
yeah, I just thought
bitch,
it was,
I remember the white horse.
I just
comment.
Thought it was an interesting leap that Will made there. I was like, I don't necessarily agree that we'd know that he was the most resistant one at this point.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's funny because it's almost as if someone was hyperfixated on a certain person.
Yeah.
From a few years ago.
You would also, in that time, have to presume he hadn't changed his mind, though.
There is that.
Can you imagine? Battler turns back up at the island in 1986, and he's like, I'm a witch now. I've changed everything about my personality.
Well, like, we know Shannon's crystals, girly.
And Shannon's sitting there shit.
We know that Battler is an avid mystery novel reader, so that probably implies if he was presented with some unlikely murders, he probably wouldn't immediately go, it was a witch. He'd probably go, oh, this is just like this book I read.
I want to take this moment also to say, like, who's the most resistant out of all three of us, do you think?
Probably Rowan.
It's definitely not Corey. I don't know, actually, because, as much as I am very willing in this fictional context to go along with all of this, like, in real life, I'm really heavily, like, not supernatural shit at all. Like, I'm the avid mystery reader. that battle.
No, Rowan would be like, this is all bullshit. I'm not going to explain how it's done, but it's bullshit.
Yeah, you do that and then be like, I am going to explain how it was done. And it's bullshit.
Yeah. You do. Because that's how you are about the fucking epitaph and stuff, right?
Yeah, I like to know how things work, and I'm gonna suss it out. It's why when I'm reading like fantasy or supernatural stuff, I'm like, I want to know how their systems of fantasy and magic things work. Like, I want there to be logic underpinning it, to explain how it works and stuff. Because otherwise, I'm like, well, what? Why does it work? You haven't explained.
Yeah, that's fair. That's interesting. Not to get like really real on the pod, but I think it would depend on whether or not the witch was benevolent. If it was evil witches, I would fight it till the fucking last.
if they were killing your family over and over again.
Right, but like also like, you know when you're like going downstairs and it's dark and you're like, oh shit, maybe there's something around the corner. I'm like, I refuse to be taken in by that instinct. I will just like sort of power through it out of like sheer, I can't really think of the word. Like, I will just power through it. But, like, you give me, like, a benevolent supernatural power. You give me, like, evidence, possible evidence for God's existence or something. And I'm like, yeah, fucking baby! Infinite universe! All humans are tied together by a web. And I'm like, yeah, no, that slaps. So I think if you presented me with, like, a kind witch, I'd be like, yeah, no, that slaps, actually. That's real. You give me, like, fucking Beatrice, I'm like, nah.
No. Anime witches.
There's
not
more of
my
gravy
watch.
Than I think gravy
that,
about
I
you.
I think that means I'm more battler than you are. And I don't know how to feel about that.
Ooh. Sleeper third arc Jess Battler. Come into the like twilight days of the pod. And it's unveiled that you were actually battler.
I was battler the whole time.
This God. Does leave room for me to now slide back into my place of just being dual gentleman.
Like, yeah, this doesn't. Space, we still don't. We don't know how evil he is. Yeah.
I hope he's really evil. I look forward to that in my future.
Where were we in this reading?
Good question.
Great question. So Will has just basically like is about to ask Maria about the mariage. Sorcière, and then
she's like, "Bitch, I'm thirsty." Bye.
Yeah. She just goes.
Yeah,
bye.
She turns and she's like, "I want some orange juice." See ya. Which yeah. is the biggest power move I've ever seen. Which is great.
Sure. Will deduces that it's Burncastle telling him to go ask something else,
which I will say is extremely unsubtle, almost maybe without love.
It is a Burncastle thing to be like, now nah, here's the like backs. She did say like, oh, here's the back of the theater. You're gonna see some of
the like,
workings of the play.
Yeah.
The place you're sat, you can like look down into the orchestra pit and see them like bowing away.
I will say there's a bit of theorizing that Will does right before this as well. Which was incredibly confusing. So I was wondering if you could help clear this up for me, Courtney.
No problem.
So, because he's talking about, like, yeah, okay, it needs two people to create a world or whatever. But what if instead of you talk about this universe that you're creating, what if you talk about a Beatrice? So he's like, one person can birth one, but they desire a second person to, like, nurture it, keep it alive, acknowledge it, maybe you might say.
Yes.
And then he's like, oh, so the Beatrice meeting Maria would be like the Beatrice finding that second person to create the universe with, like, a chick, maybe. And I'm like, yeah, like, chick Beatrice, whatever. We've been there. And then, but then she solidified into an elder Beatrice, the Witch of Rokunjima's Night, and had like a full, developed her own backstory and proper personality through talking with Maria. But then he's like, oh, but chick Beatrice was born out of love for Battler, and that all hadn't happened yet. So this elder Beatrice clearly had nothing to do with Battler, And I'm like, Maria was older than three when she met Beatrice, so obviously that Shannon has met Battler at this point. So the birth of Beatrice would have had something to do with Battler, surely. And I had no idea what he was talking about.
My guy was like, nah, actually, I haven't got the solution yet. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't know if he's just wrong, but like that whole like bit of logic from him just didn't really make any sense to me.
I guess it's interesting. I think because what he's getting down to is this Beatrice isn't made for Battler, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I see what you mean. It seems like it's made for Maria, not for Battler.
Yeah, it's made for Maria and maybe the interests of whoever is being Beatrice, but it doesn't seem to be for Battler's sake at all, while it's incredibly likely at this point that the one in 1986 was.
It's possible. My thought is that they're both exactly the same. It's just that the one that was created for Maria then became something that Shannon was like, wait, I can use this for something to do with Battler in 1986, which is why Will thinking, treating them as separate people confused me, because I'd never thought of them like that.
It's literally like that thing from Gravity Falls where Beatrice shows up with a letter for Battler that says, do you like me? Yes, definitely, absolutely. It's that.
He's like, oh my god, it's stamped by the Yusuromiya family head ring. What's going on?
But yeah, I guess what also confuses me is obviously this Beatrice has already introduced the concept of the anti-magic toxin and showing people who are less resistant to it herself so that they can all acknowledge her together. And I'm like, so there's already at least some element of this Beatrice wanting other people to acknowledge her. And that's linked to Battler somehow. If not now, then later. So, yeah. I don't know. What you doing there, Beato?
What you doing? Speaking of what you're doing, we now switch over to everyone's favourite cousin, Jessica.
Well, he tries to talk to George first.
Yeah, and George is like, please.
George is like, it's a fantasy that I try not to break because Maria's a child and you should protect the purity of childhood dreams. And I'm like, yeah, but apparently watching that same child be abused is fucking fine, you loser.
Yeah, that's fine. Just like protect your childhood dreams, but in a way where I don't have to interact with them. Thanks.
Yeah. Anyway, he basically says, I don't know anything about Beatrice and fucks off.
Yeah. Least insane centrist.
Meanwhile, Jessica is trying, he tries to get information out of her. And he sort of gets a ghost story.
Yeah.
From her.
Jessica's like, listen, I didn't believe. So she like consults a bunch of people and they're like, listen, we don't necessarily believe, but we have all of this evidence why we should be. So we kind of like treat it with the respect.
My favorite one of these is Goda, because he's like, she probably doesn't exist, but he's like fucking shaking in his boots the whole time. Yeah. And I'm like, he clearly does. He's super freaked out, but he doesn't want to admit it.
Bless him.
Little scaredy cat.
So Jessica makes her mind to go up into the guest room at 2 a.m.
because the VIP room.
Yes.
VIP room.
The one that Beatrice episode 2 stays in, presumably.
Yeah, that's where Beato's supposed to appear at night.
At 2 a.m.
2 a.m. in the VIP room.
And interestingly, the two people that were present when Jessica was told about this story were Shannon and Goda. Shannon was the one who told her about it. And I'm like, interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. So Jessica goes up and there's a little doll and some chocolates, and she's like kind of freaked out because it looks like she's comparing it to a religious shrine in her head, and she's like, oh shit, it's a shrine.
The doll looks like Beatrice, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got golden hair. And she's like, oh crap. And then the phone rings and it picks up and it's Maria, and Maria's like chatting as though like, hi Beatrice, XOXO. Remember that song you taught me? And then starts like singing a creepy little song. And Jessica's like,
shit. So here's the thing. The song that she sings
is the same one from episode one. Yes. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. And I don't know whether that means that it's a recording that's been used twice or whether it's just that Beatrice was like, this is your creepy song to sing in creepy times. I might ask you to use it a couple of times.
Shannon, like, prepping the murder mystery shit by teaching creepy songs is very funny.
Yeah.
Gonna start doing this to local children, teaching them like creepy ass songs.
For your various murder plots.
I don't have any murder plots. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm convinced.
So, after this phone call, the lights go out. There's like a power cut.
Yeah, the phone cuts out and the lights go off.
There's like some scrambling noises. And the doll and the doll is just missing. The offering plate is still there. But, the doll is just gone.
Yeah, Jessica says that it sounds like the noise of someone like getting out of bed, but there hadn't been anyone in the bed. And when the lights come back on, it looks like no one's been in it. But it sounds like the sound of someone getting out of bed and then leaving the room. And she's super creeped.
It's absolutely someone who was stood behind the curtains.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Because Will asks her what she thought actually happened.
She thinks it's probably the servants, but she's still kind of freaked out because she's like, the fact that they'd go to this extent to freak me out was the scariest.
Yeah, because she realizes that if it was the servants, it had to be at least three people, because someone would have needed to hide in the room. Someone would have needed to cut the power downstairs, and someone would also have needed to like ring the room to do the phone call thing from a different location. And I think she says that Kumasawa, Genji, and Shannon were all...
And Goda
were all staying over. So she was like, it had to be at least three of them. I'm like, okay, so it wasn't Goda. Goda was just having a chill night in bed, you know, and the other three were all doing...
Goda was doing his crossword. Plots. Just chilling out.
But yeah, she's really creeped out at the fact that all three of them would band together just for a prank like that. And I'm like, actually, knowing what we know about all things, that's almost entirely definitely what happened. Because they're so capable of that.
I read into this that Shannon has been phoning Maria every night. Because Maria's left completely unattended by Rosa. Yeah. And so Shannon's been like phoning Maria every night, and they've been like chatting at 2 a.m. about like witch stuff to like keep up the Beato thing. That's what I had read into like the Maria recording.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, that's cute.
It could be a recording. But,
it could be a recording, but yeah, it's also like, I think Shannon would both have had plenty of opportunity either to ring Maria herself or record her, either.
Or just instruct Maria to call at 2 and be, because like Rosa's out all the time, so Maria could be available at 2.
Yeah.
And just have her like, just be like, say this, and if you hear anyone interrupting, you don't stop.
Yeah, or she could have even said like, Jessica doesn't yet believe I exist. I'm going to do some magic to try and convince her, or I need you to do this. And like, yeah, that would have got Maria on board, I think. So
let's help me convince Jessica.
Yeah, help me wear down her anti-magic toxin.
Yeah,
yeah.
Then we have some more seat lore, where even Jessica seems confused about her seat.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I see what's happening now, because what's happening is Will is creating like a web of truths in order to prove that Leon doesn't exist, and Leon's not at the family conference.
Yeah, because it's something like because this particular event, the VIP room where Jessica went in, happened the night after a family conference, because it was caused by an argument she had with Maria, and Anja had been at that conference, and so it's talking about like Anja was on Jessica's right, and if Leon as basically like, with how the family conference seating plan works out, that's not where she should have been sitting. And so she's really confused.
She's really confused because she's obviously got conflicting memories here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, Will is going to use this to prove that Leon doesn't exist.
This is when I started drawing diagrams.
And this is also where Will starts questioning Leon about the epitaph and Beatrice being a witch. And he has no idea about either of those.
Yeah, he's like, Leon's like, I've never heard of the whole witch Beatrice story. I don't know what the epitaph is. Which is interesting because Jessica specifically mentioned the portrait and the epitaph in her recollection of that story. So it's not like in this, it's not like it doesn't exist for any of them now.
So it seems like any kind of world where Leon is there, there isn't an epitaph. And Beatrice is not a witch.
Yeah. Yeah, because Leon's like, oh yeah, I know about the Beatrice, the mistress and the real people Beatrices that they were talking about, but not the witches. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure all of that gets solved in the next chapter, no?
It might do, but the only thing that doesn't really get solved is why is the epitaph not there when Leon is there?
Don't need to choose a new family head. Leon's going to be the family head. They don't need the epitaph to select one.
Ooh, okay, okay.
That's pretty straightforward to me. Hence why we also don't need the Beato, like, mythos, because you don't need, like, that all of that, like, sort of smoke and mirrors to create that. It's just like Kenzo can turn around and be like, all right, listen, there's a military base under here. There's 10,000 tons of gold. Here's how you do it.
I think what's confusing about me about how the earlier episodes go is that the epitaph and the Beatrice figure and the kind of the original letters that get sent to the family saying you have to solve the epitaph really clearly point to a ritual that is meant to be about choosing the next family head. But killing everybody doesn't. And so I'd been thinking before as those two things as being inherently connected, but I guess they don't have to be. Like, if Shannon decided, like, knew that there was going to be this thing going on about the epitaph choosing the next family head and decided, like, actually, I'm going to use Beatrice, the figure, for my own gains to murder everyone at the same time. And her motivations are different.
Yeah.
Then that makes more sense, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm also considering a universe. I think Kenzo is insane enough to be like, the only person who can succeed me is a child of Beatrice and I. And as a consequence, since that child is dead, I'm going to... Although it doesn't really explain his behavior around Natsui, but he's like, if that child is dead, I'm just gonna like blow all this shit up. I don't know. Thinking about it, I think your explanation's more reasonable.
It's difficult to work out what... Because Kinzo's obviously dead at the point where 1986 happens. So it's like trying to work out, like, are we working on the remnants of a Kinzo plot that the servants are carrying out, but they've... on his orders? Or is it, like, they've used his basis of stuff to do their own plot that's completely separate? I wanna go to a little bit as well that I love from this chapter, which is Will talking about how Beatrice must have wanted to be acknowledged as real so badly because it would make her human, which implies that she started as less than human furniture, you might say. You know, we knew that. Oh. But there's an absolutely banger screenshot here where it says that furniture can't, and then it puts four asterisks on the screen. But humans can. I'm like, furniture can't fuck? I'm like, Shannon decided to murder everyone as a witch so she could fuck? And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not what the game wanted to say, but like at the same time, what are they censoring in that?
they're censoring the word love, but
Shannon,
typical incel.
It was established in the love games that furniture can love, but like they're not allowed to like formalize that in like marriage or something. So
Oh god.
So I was just like, furniture cop, fuck.
I really like the idea of like replacing it with like furniture can't piss. Like Shannon is just like plaiting her legs the whole time.
She needs to piss so bad.
It's the go piss go meme, but it's just Shannon super.
Furniture just can't serve cunt. That's the thing. She needs to become. She needs to become Beatrice.
So it could be furniture can't serve.
Yeah, she needs to become Beatrice so that she can.
Oh my god.
That was my favourite bit of that chapter, anyway.
So let's move on to here's the culprit. I will say, there is some more kind of allusions to sexual assault in this bit, but, like, we kind of covered all the, like, the actual depth we need to go into last episode, so we're just going to have to accept that it's a fact that it happened and sort of not go into it too much, I think.
The interesting thing here, which I appreciated, is if you are reading the Let's Play and you're following along the Let's Play, if you go back, there's, like, a little warning at the top with, like, discussion of sexual assault, and I'm like, shout out to the person who created the Let's Play for being that vigilant. Could you also be vigilant about the fucking comedy sexual assault as well? Because that's still sexual assault. It's just played for laughs instead. Like,
it's tonally different, but yeah.
That's its own problem.
I'm just not gonna let it drop because, like, God forbid I give Umineko any inch of space.
Yeah. No slack here.
So, basically, Will deduces that Maria tends to recognize people by their behavior instead of their physical appearance, which is something that's been alluded to before, where she thinks there are two different people who look like her mother.
Yeah, Maria, there's her mom, and then there's the Black Witch, who's the abusive one.
So Will thinks what probably actually happened is one of the servants probably just pretended to be, like, possessed by Beatrice and acted in a different way and would speak in this specific antiquated speaking pattern that Beatrice
with the
uses.
Pronouns and the ha-ha-ha.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this witch got fucking pronouns?
I know, right? She's got exactly the same hair that she did before, but she has pronouns now.
And that's Beato the Elder, is this persona that was created for Maria. And so Maria, like, quite naturally just sort of accepted it because it's in her character to do so. Like, she's very trusting, and she, if someone came up to her and spoke in a weird way and said, I'm possessed by a witch, she'd probably believe them.
Yeah, like, there's an interesting bit, actually, where Jessica and Will are talking earlier, where they consider the possibility of Maria having multiple personalities. And Jessica kind of says, like, I think it's probably just more like she's really into witches and she really likes having that knowledge because it's not knowledge that other people around her have. And as the youngest person, she wants the respect that is gained by knowing things that other people don't know. But she's not allowed to have any of that when Rosa's around, because Rosa hates it so much that when she's, like, when she's around the extended family, she acts like a different person sometimes when she slips into her witch persona. And that because of that, she's much more likely to see other selves in other people as well. Which is interesting.
Wonder if this bitch is autistic.
I wonder if Maria's been written to be autistic.
I wonder.
Who knows?
I wonder if any of these bitches have dissociative disorders, because...
I don't know. Don't know if that's a thing that trauma would do to a person.
It is.
Seems kind of dubious to me that trauma would make someone dissociate.
No, definitely not.
I was fully like, so Maria is masking around Rosa and then just getting, like, quite excited when she actually gets to talk about her special interest.
But yeah, it adds more credence to the idea that if Shannon came up and was like, even if Shannon was like, this is my true self, I am Beatrice, she'd be like, yeah, okay. That fits with my worldview.
I refer you to one of the earlier episodes when I fully convinced a child that I was like this evil necromancer who'd taken over my body. And then like the child remembered this a year later.
I can't believe you be a tree shade IRL.
Yeah. I thought it would be a fun little game to play with a 10-year-old. I didn't realize like I'd come back the next year and he'd recall details I myself had forgotten.
At least you didn't murder any of their family. I think that's the really the important bit here.
Yeah.
Yes, I would never kill anyone.
Hmm. So, Will says, thanks to this, he can deduce who the culprit is.
Mm.
Because the only person who can really kill off this Beatrice is the actor playing them. And so, there are two culprits, basically.
Yeah, this bit was
the one who can
so
create
confusing.
And kill Beatrice, and the one who never created Beatrice in the first place. And the first culprit is Leon, because in Leon's world, Beatrice never existed, because in other worlds, Leon would have been the one to create Beatrice.
Which... basically, I guess if you follow this conclusion through to its to the end, means that Leon and Shannon and Cannon are the same person.
Yes, which makes sense because Leon didn't recognize
Shannon or
Shannon
Cannon
and
didn't know their names. Yeah, I picked up on that.
Yeah.
And also, Leon has some gender things going on.
Leon does have some gender things going on.
I don't
that shit's definitely comprehensible.
I personally, I'm sorry, Leon, as much as you're cool and you have gender stuff going on, I prefer Shannon and Cannon. They don't pinch anyone's ass.
I'm gonna give this a moment to talk about briefly the conversation that Will and Leon have about gender, because sorry, I'm gonna control F. Girl.
That was an
it's a bit
later, yeah.
Go for
it's,
it.
Yeah, not tied. Oh, it's not tied to anything in particular, really.
Yeah. I just felt thematically like the time to say that. So yeah, Will's like, I have a question. Are you a boy or a girl? And Leon sort of like dodges the question.
Yeah, basically.
They're like, what do you think? Which is absolutely based response.
Yeah.
Asks.
Yeah, it's basic. They basically like, say, what do you think and why does it matter?
Yeah, which is fun. If someone's a waste of space, I'll smack them no matter who they are. Absolutely, like, iconic of Will to say. Love that behavior. Yeah. Leon does follow this with, and of course I'll pinch rude people no matter which gender they are, which like completely cringe behavior for twofold. One, which gender? Secondly, pinching people again. Come on.
Like, stop that. It should be, your non-consensual groping should not be all encompassing. It should be none.
Truly, truly proving that like gender non-conforming people can still be fucking dickheads.
So we basically, Burncastle then shows up and is like, "Yeah, Will, you've worked it out. Basically, this guy here is the baby of Kinzo and the second Beatrice that he tried to force Natsuhi to adopt." And Leon is from the one timeline which has such a slim chance of actually happening, where Natsuhi does not kill the baby.
Yeah, which I do think is kind of funny, is that like Natsuhi was so set on this that it's like incredibly difficult to find a reality in which she was not happy to murder a child.
Yeah.
But there was one. And yeah, Leon has a little bit of a time because obviously they're grappling with the concept that their dad is also their granddad, understandably.
Yeah, Leon's not vibing with that, which fair enough.
But then if Leon is the same person as Cannon and Shannon, first of all, why don't they have the same hair colour? That's not the important thing.
No.
But like, why are Shannon and Cannon servants? And Leon is a very respected head of the family who's going to become the successor. Are we dealing with a situation in which, because obviously in Natsu, he has chucked this baby off a cliff. So are we dealing with a situation where this child has, as far as Kinzo knows, died?
Yes.
But isn't actually dead and has somehow ended up, I'm going to presume, not like coincidentally, because this would be a big coincidence, at Kinzo's own orphanage and then gets employed back into his family as servants. I think
it's like when you kill a slime cube in Minecraft and it spawns into two, like, smaller slime cubes. Like, Natsui just chucked Leon off a cliff, and as Leon impacted the ground,
Shannon and Cannon came out.
Shannon and Cannon.
And they both bounced.
That's what I've decided.
They both bounced across the sea and into an orphanage.
Yeah, well, that's why Shannon's so bouncy, you see.
I will say we might get some more information on this later. Is what I'm going to say to that.
Like, because I was thinking, the differences between them seem weird. It would seem weird if Kinzo didn't know that it was the same child, but at the same time, it would seem weird that Kinzo made them, like, allowed them to stay servants otherwise, unless he just didn't want to admit that he had an illegitimate child, even though all of his kids kind of knew that he had a mistress, so it wouldn't be that big of a deal.
But also, this means that Battler and fucking Beato Shannon are fucking related.
Oh, of course it does.
Once again.
Of course it does. Whether Shannon and Cannon know that themselves is, I think it would be a coincidence if Kinzo didn't know about this, but I think it's completely reasonable to suggest that Shannon and Cannon don't know what their own origins are.
Why does this book keep being like, actually I wrote incest back into the book?
You shipped an incest crack ship that became that became an incest main ship.
God, it's so like back in my Supernatural days.
As resident Battler Beato defender, I will say I'm more interested in meta Beato and Battler rather than actual Beato, who I don't see as weird incest implications.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's very interesting technicality.
Yeah, it is. It's the technicality that only works in Umineko, but I'm going to fucking run with it.
I also, my other theory for how this could work is if Kinzo knows that Shannon and Cannon are his child of Beatrice, but also is like, I can't really claim them or whatever, then maybe the epitaph is out there. So as basically a prompt for Shannon and Cannon to solve it so that they can become the next successor without him actually claiming his illegitimate child.
Yeah.
It is a way around it. That's a good point.
It's a bit complicated, but we aren't going to say anyone in the Ushirimiyas didn't, go to extremely weirdly long lengths for stuff, you know?
When he put up that epitaph, everyone was like, oh yeah, it's very on brand for Grandad.
So. Yeah, he's a weirdo, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah.
This book is so baroque.
It's like, so complicated.
There is so much shit going on at any given moment. I've just chosen to not think about the Leon, Cannon, Shannon being one person thing. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't like it. I'm not going to look at it directly. Fuck that.
My also favourite thing about all of this
never relevant again
is that, Leon, after having this revelation, convinces Will to let them look at the other fragments to see, what they'd have become if they weren't Leon. And Will's like, I don't think you should do that, but I'm, not gonna stop you if you want to. Leon does it, immediately blacks out and collapses on the floor, and then Will and Burncastle just have a chat next to their body. for the rest of the episode.
Honestly, iconic line from Leon, because Will's like, as your partner, I'd say take a look. More information is relevant, like useful, I guess. As your friend, I say don't. And then Leon just reacts with, well, I'm not your friend, so I'm going to look.
Yeah.
I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
You tell him.
So while Leon's blacked out, they sort of discuss the living cat, the second culprit.
Yeah, the entire thing, it was extremely confusing because basically Will was like, there's a live cat, which is the person who's playing Beatrice, and the dead cat is the one who stops Beatrice existing. So the dead cat's Leon, and the alive cat, as far as we know, is Shannon. And I'm like, blah, 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 blah. I'm dying. My brain is frazzled.
Will goes on to do what Rikishi did and says that while the game is solvable with just the first four games, games 5 and 6 contain useful hints to put it together. Especially the who am I and also the something about the closed room chain, which is interesting.
Yeah, gotta go back and look at that, I suppose. God.
Yeah. Is this a point where he's like, listen, I can figure out the who done it and the how done it, but like, it's the why done it that's...
Yeah, he's trying to piece together the why done it.
I just realised that the closed room chain is really breaks down in a sense, because I just remembered that Shannon and Cannon are both corpses in there. And they're the same.
Oh my God, they're
person.
Running back and forth between the
like
rooms.
How does that work? Because like Battler, and I think pretty much everyone discover. Oh, maybe Battler doesn't see those corpses. I'm not sure actually.
It's just the adults who see those corpses.
But the adults aren't, as far as we are aware, in on the whole Shannon Cannon being the same person thing. So like, yeah, there's something going on there.
Maybe there's an order that they get discovered or something.
They do find Shannon first. I remember that.
Because it's
find
like,
Shannon
oh,
first and Cannon last.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's enough time to like do a costume change.
And yeah, if you're not, if you find Shannon first, and she still has and she is left with a key, then while you've left the room, she can go unlock a door, lock it behind her, and be dead again in a different outfit.
Yeah.
It's a swift change, but you gotta...
Yeah, listen, sometimes in panto, it's the best you can do.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So...
So he is ready to have the culprit confess their sins to him in place of Battler, as we end with the sentence, here's the culprit.
Yeah.
Who could it be?
And it's interesting, like, the culprit actually walks in during this end bit, but we are seeing that from their perspective. Like, they nod and, like, the camera moves up and down and stuff. So, like... I don't know whether to, like, I think it's probably a fun trick so that we don't actually get to see who it is. But at first I was like, oh my God, is it us? Is it us, the player? Are we
oh my
the
God,
culprit?
It's like the end of, like, fucking Metal Gear. It's going to start, like, posting shit off your laptop. Like,
because, like,
clues.
I'm still very aware that, like, us, the player, have been positioned as a character at some point here. And, like, that's not really been addressed since, like, episode 2 or something. At least directly. And so I'm like, when are we going to get the reveal of who we're playing here? Like, it would be wild if we were, like, meta Shannon or something. Can you imagine?
Oh my God. It fucking, at the beginning, when you start playing Uman Echo, it asks you to, like, log into Facebook or something. And then next chapter, it's going to post your Facebook profile picture. And you're like, shit, I shouldn't have been using Donald Duck as my Facebook profile picture. This would be so much more immersive.
Can you imagine? I would not trust any game that was like... You know, imagine like a non-online game that you were going to play and it was like, give us your Facebook account. I'd be like, what? What are you doing? They're like, this won't be relevant, don't worry.
It's fucking sonic.exe.
Oh no. No, thank you. But yeah, so there's been a lot of revelations in this, and I don't really know all of... I haven't considered all of the implications. The ones I have considered are confusing and scary. I will say, I think it's not only does Leon have a different hair colour to Shannon and Cannon have a different hair colour to each other, so they've got a nice range going on between all three of these same people. I want to say they've got some good wigs or something, or something. Access to hair dye, on Leon's
that's
case.
A lot of hair dye to be like dying.
Can you imagine like Nat Sui's there like, Leon, I know you have naturally really dark hair, but we're going to dye your hair blonde your whole life. Don't ask questions. It's just so you look like your sister.
I think it's probably just anime VN flourish.
Probably,
but you know.
It's funny. Yeah.
God. Well, that's an episode.
That sure is an episode. Do you have any further questions, Jess? You said you came in with a lot of questions. Have we answered all of them?
Like, all of the ones that we could, I think. Like, okay. This...
But you still have existing questions that might be solved later in the end.
Yeah, yeah. What? Yeah, but that's my final question. My final question is what? Why? How?
What I really want to know is Natsui always throwing that baby off a cliff? Or have we got, like, Natsui fucking smothers a baby episode?
Have we got different...
Natsui poison episode? Got... Like, does the child die the same way every time?
The child is always thrown off a cliff.
This is when it's revealed that basically Kumasawa had saw all of this coming and had engineered it so that the servant who was carrying the baby would stand near a rickety fence in just the right place so that Kumasawa could engineer, like, put a little trampoline under the drop so that the baby would just kind of boing on that for a while and then Kumasawa could take the baby to the mainland.
And all I'm saying is if you tie a balloon to an egg, it will survive a drop off a cliff. And what is Shannon Cannon Leon if not an egg?
In more ways than one.
Delicious egg.
This game is so complicated.
This game is so egg-based.
Oh my god.
So, for next week, we will be reading from Chapter 9, A New Life, to Chapter 12, New Days.
Lots of new.
Mm. Yeah, it's so new. Wow.
OMG, so new. Mm. Who'da knew?
Who'da knew? And I will say this, we'll be getting some very interesting backstory. So then maybe that will answer some of your questions. Ooh. Maybe it will create more questions for me to answer.
I wonder whose backstory. So it could be Shannon Cannon backstory? Should start calling them Shikannon.
Mm-hmm. Shakira.
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 I think we cut the episode there.
Culprit of Eamon Echo.
Shakira.
Well, on that very upbeat note, our socials are in the description. Please follow us on Tumblr at Hidden Tea Party. Yes, sort of progress on getting that Twitter account back. My Twitter's still there, so you can go follow it.
I'm never going back. I'm really sorry. I hate Eamon Echo Twitter, but it's better than I've left.
I don't know. I think you really added something special to Eamon Echo Twitter, and I hope your contributions are never forgotten.
I'm grateful for that. However, the pod Tumblr is, like, far outstripping anything I ever did. So if you're listening,
true,
go follow the fucking pod Tumblr. Download Tumblr in order to follow the pod Tumblr alone.
Yeah.
Do it.
We have Discord notifications for it. It's insane.
It's so good. Every time I get a Discord notification for the server, I'm like, another banger. Another banger.
Yes, another banger.
Well, thank you.
How do they do it?
I use up all my funny allowance for every day on that account.
Incredible.
Your sacrifice is appreciated. Yeah. So, on that note, thank you and good night.
Bye.